With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Matt Knight.
Ready.
And JD Short.
Hi there.
Hello, hello indeed, and hello dear listener. Welcome back. Welcome to the fifth episode in season three of the Guitar Nerds Podcast. Okay, so straight off the bat, I want to talk about podcast charts, right? So, yeah. So I subscribe to, there's this thing called Chartable. It's impossible to write anywhere because it auto-corrects to charitable all the time. Anyway, I'm part of this thing called Chartable that like tells you where your podcast is in all the various charts. Of course, the Apple podcast chart is the big one. And, you know, we fluctuate sort of in and out of the top 20, really, in both the US and the UK for hobbies podcasts. And I'm sort of broadly aware of the other podcasts that are in the other hobbies podcast. But I was like, I'm going to just now, whilst we were waiting to set up, I was like, I want to have a look. What are our competitors in the top 10? And they are so perfect. So I checked the UK one, or the Great Britain one, rather, and I checked the US one. And they're such wonderful examples of the two countries as well. So let's talk about top 10. So the US. In the US, what sort of things do you guys think are going to be hobbies podcasts that are going to be popular in the US?
Bass fishing,
guns, freedom.
Okay,
is freedom a hobby? I guess it is.
Freedom's a way of life. Freedom is a calling.
Well, you know, in at number one, gun talk. Absolutely.
Great.
And also, by the looks of it, an unmoving number one, like consistently number one.
Very threatening to not be number one.
Exactly. And then like in at number two is Darkness Radio, which is like a paranormal investigation, I think.
Yeah. Makes sense.
And then we've got in at number three, and this is a trend across both the UK and the US that I was surprised by, but also it appears much more in the UK. This particular one is called Adeptus Ridiculous, which is a Warhammer podcast.
Oh,
and there's another one. Lorehammer is the sixth most popular podcast in hobbies podcast in America. So like Warhammer's all in there. In at number four, and this is, I'd have expected this to be above Warhammer really in the States, the Major Wrestling Figure Podcast. So, you know, so I feel that those are good things. Those were like things that I was like, yeah, this is a good sort of bunch of popular things in America. Weirdly enough, in at number five, a woodworking podcast called Woodwork. Wood Talk.
Just before you go on, Joe, I've just checked out Gun Talk. And again, you know, if you're into guns or you're in a country that allows guns, fair enough. But us UK people, I mean, last time I went to America, I went to Las Vegas and walked into a gun shop and the guy was like, can I help? And I was like, no, I'm just amazed that I'm looking at a gun. It's like, I just couldn't believe it. And looking at some of the episodes here, the episode from the 6th of February of Gun Talk, Tom Gresham's Gun Talk. Uber driver considers carry options. In this hour, an Uber driver wants to protect himself, so he's considering a handgun. Which one should he use?
Oh. Well, that's the same as when people sort of message me and are like, what sort of amplifier should I use for small to medium-sized gigs?
It's the exact question. And really, it's like, is a Sig Sauer there like Baja Telly or something like that?
Yeah.
Those who are into both, you'll get it.
Surely the Baja's the Beretta M90FS, the Bruce Willis and Mel Gibson guitar of choice throughout every action movie in the late 80s and early 90s.
I feel like it's probably some sort of Ruger, some classic. Anyway, we digress.
We digress.
Indeed.
But okay, so that is a relatively, I feel, sort of macho set of podcasts, you know, from the American one. In at number one, in the Great British Podcast, and one of several podcasts on this theme in the top 10 alone, the Official Nash Tackle Podcast. It is a fishing podcast.
I thought you said Naff Tackle, and then I was like, that's something completely different.
So, quite comfortably in at first. Well, actually, it looks like it trades places with the second most popular hobbies podcasts in Great Britain, the BBC Gardener's World Magazine podcast.
Classic.
In at number three is the Thinking Tackle Podcast. Number four is Lawhammer, so Warhammer getting in there. Number five, Scottish Watches, which is got to be the most specific podcast. You know, that you were very limited on what you can talk about.
Is that just watching Scottish people?
It's
like Spring Watch, but for Scottish people.
Is it like bird watching and whatnot?
Yeah.
It has a better rating than us. Rating and reviews is consistently high.
I think this is a call to action, dear listeners.
Great. Amazing. Yeah, okay. So it's another podcast that barely mentions the actual subject matter by the looks of the reviews, but the people that run it are very funny.
I think you just read out us.
yes, exactly. But, you know, the more Warhammer and carp fishing podcasts in for the rest of the top 10. But, yeah, there you go.
So, looking at Chartable, so we're number 16, did you say, in hobbies in Great Britain right now?
At the moment, yeah, obviously it fluctuates.
That's amazing considering how many podcasts are there.
Yeah. Also for us, bear in mind, this is the furthest day away from when a podcast comes out, so it's likely to be our lowest seeding day.
It still amazes me. I mean, again, you know, hobbies, United States of America, hobbies, Apple Podcasts, 41. I mean, that, you know, again, out of the hundreds of gun podcasts and Warhammer podcasts and gun fishing and Warhammer podcasts, we're still ranked so highly. So I think there's a real thank you for everyone who is definitely listening to this. You know, sometimes, I don't know, it doesn't seem real, does it, Joe? 10 years. No. I was actually this weekend writing my wedding speech, and Joe, you get a nice all the guitar nerds get a nice little mention in the speech, and about how that it has been, you know, 10 years this year since we first started eating crisps on a microphone and talking about Strymon to where we are right now.
I still have the first set of mics that we used to podcast with in a box somewhere. You know, I almost sold them recently, and I was like, you know, they're not as good as, you know, some of the stuff that we use now. But I was like, I'm not going to get rid of these. This is history.
I mean, I remember listening to like a lot of the early episodes and even pre Guitar Nerds, and just being like, how many things have I purchased? Like whilst listening, just listening, you know, like whilst doing dishes and things like that.
That is good to know. That is good to know that we have. I mean, because it happens to me as well. The problem with this podcast is I get excited about the things that we talk about, and I'm sat at a computer. It was fine when we were sat in a room doing it because you're not on the computer at the time that you're podcasting. But now I have, you know, company credit cards and a computer in front of me. It's
And no one there to stop you. Like if we were all in a room still together, you could be like someone would be like, no, don't push by.
Exactly. God damn it. God damn it. Well, anyway. So, but yes, let's talk about some guitar things. Anyway, JD, this is your first podcast of the year.
Yeah.
And you bought an amp recently. What did you get?
I did. I was looking for something mostly for recording and everything, and I have a long affinity for flip-top head amps. And so I found an old, mid-60s, I think, Fenton Weil Portaflex, or Portabass is what it's called. It's not Portaflex. That's trademarked by somebody else. Portabass 15, which is... It's basically 30 watt all valve head, 60 some years old. Sounds exactly like you would expect it to. The front end is very much like classic B15, and then it's just really cool. The grill is this sort of, it's black and steel, like very Art Deco style. Just great. Just, you know, handmade head in London in the '60s. So I was like, might as well get something local, something new, and it sounds great. It's probably the loudest 30 watts for a bass amp I've ever heard.
Really?
Currently, it actually has a greenback in it, which is like an old Celestian greenback. I haven't dated it to see what it is, but someone replaced it at some point. But yeah, I got it for a great deal, and... was basically just like, this is exactly what I wanted, and yeah, really filled a niche, because I was also looking at much more expensive sort of full-fledged rigs, which I don't currently have a use for here. I might in the US this summer, but I was like, why would I buy a full rig here and then ship it to the US or just like borrow a rig then anyway? So
This is a wild looking rig, like, and not something I've ever heard of, the Fenton Weil amp. So they've never crossed paths with me before.
I think in a bit of research, I think he was one of the guys that worked with Burns when they were starting making guitars, and so they made guitars and then also sort of an offshoot of an amp, and then I think also did a bit of work with a lot of the early Somer designs and things like that that you'll see around. So
I love the stuff it's something that I think you get a lot with British gear from around the 60s, where they were trying not to follow suit with American designed amplifiers at all. And this is, you know, it's so different and interesting and weird looking. The fact that the top of the head is angled, as you say, Art Deco, but it sort of has this weird... I don't know, like, you could almost mistake it for an 80s metal amp, dear listener. Yeah. You have to look at it. It's so strange. Such a weird hybrid.
Yeah, I'll post some photos, or Joe, if you want to share some, I'll send them to you and share. But yeah, it's really, really cool amp, and I really dig it. It does, so right now I've got it hooked up through, you know, I have two notes, torpedo captor, and it's a 16 ohm, so I just have the sort of standard straight torpedo captor, and it's great to give me that, you know, crank it a bit distorted, but I can play it at home. So the whole point was I wanted a bit of that grit. Like, a lot of the stuff I've been playing recently, it really makes sense for me to have sort of a, you know, a distorted amp, as well as, you know, my beloved DIs and whatnot. So I was like, well, this is really everything I wanted, and I had never heard of it either, and it was just like, this thing looks way too cool to pass up. And
this is it's really cool, really gorgeous. I'm really into this amp.
It wouldn't be out of place from like 10 years ago and the sort of, or 15 years ago and the lunchbox explosion amps, you know, for people who maybe can't Google it right now. It kind of looks like the prototype of a Tiny Terror in some ways.
It looks like if Engel did a Tiny Terror.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment.
Look younger. Feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time. The world's best converting checkout. Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your dollar a month trial today at shopify.com/records.
Yeah, it's got a kind of that sort of... I mean, there's also a cheap Far Eastern PA brand called Fenton. So probably not the same people. But I guess the only downside I can see, JD, is the fact that the power plug is on the front.
And well, so I think all of this is the back, like all the controls and everything on the back, because the angle of the faceplate, I'll get another photo, is... just has the logo, like it's a big logo sort of on the front. So it looks even cool. So I think it's more of a set it and forget it, but I was just messing with it and I wanted to have all the control. But yeah, but the speaker out is on the side, which I think is weird because then I got a right angle jack so you can sort of hide the 60-year-old speaker cord. And then, but the power is also... it's also the same as like the old Marshalls and everything that you see around that time.
Is it where, do they call it a Bulgin plug?
Yeah, which is the Bulgin, which is the manufacturer.
Yeah.
I think. So yeah, so it's basically like saying Kleenex or whatever. But yeah.
Absolutely terrible. terrible the pre standard to the standard we have now. IEC cables, basically.
Yeah, I mean, it's one where I have spec'd out a few. So I bought some connectors and some better cables that I'm rewiring everything because I can't just hold steady, and I want to have a couple spares around just so that I, and also I mean, wiring a power lead's not that hard. It's, you know, 6 points, so. Yeah, so I figured I'd have a few of those. And also I want like a right angle one. Because it's like all those design stuff you've made in the last like 60 years that it's like, oh, it'd be really great if it was right angle. So it would take a lot of the pressure off of the actual cable itself. So yeah, I just kind of want to soup it up. Also, coolest bit, I know everyone wants to know this. There's a red light inside that lights up when it's on. So it makes everything sort of the head glows like red.
That's inside. Very cool.
Yeah. Which is like, I like it when people think about it. I mean, I still think about the Blacklight Trace Elliott front panels from like the 90s as one of the best inventions. Probably the best thing I like about Trace, to be fair.
Guitar Nerds are teaming up with Music Nomad. Since 2010, Music Nomad Equipment Care has been making premium and innovative guitar care products used and trusted every day by top guitar repair shops, guitar makers, and touring techs in over 40 countries. Pro quality but affordable, Music Nomad is also the go-to for countless guitar players around the globe to help guitars look, sound, and play their best. after 2 years of research and development, and in a collaboration with top guitar repair shops, Music Nomad has developed the Keep It Simple Setup. They demystified the guitar setup process by developing innovative precision gauges and tools combined with step-by-step general guidelines anybody can follow and set up their guitar to play and sound great. With their KISS method and their gauges, you can check the vital areas of your guitar and use their toolkits to perform your own setups. They have a 24-page instructional booklet available in 7 languages, downloadable for free, loads of how-to videos, as well as complete setup video tutorials for popular brands such as Fender, Gibson, Taylor, PRS, and more. Not only is it fun, but a properly set up guitar takes your playing and sound to a whole new level. Learn more at musicnomadcare.com. Follow them on social media with @musicnomadcare and kiss your guitar with Music Nomad's Keep It Simple Setup.
I've found a Fenton an ad. Look, I'm sure you guys, if you just Google image search it, there's an old it's not dated, but there's an old 60s ad for this amp, and it's absolutely fantastic. The Fenton Wild Porter Bass, 56 guineas, trolley, 5 guineas extra. I love it. It's so good. The latest hit in the Fenton Wild range, 15-watt heavy duty amplifier, black leather cloth cabinet. With reversible top chassis, separate input channels, electronically mixed, separate volume and tone controls. Rubber tire trolley available separately. Amazing. Mm. It was available in Rose Morris as well. There you go.
Yeah. Great. Well, I mean, there's a couple of things that you're talking there, Joe, just made me think, imagine just going to Denmark Street in the 60s or 70s, you know, and so much stuff you just, you know, you would have read about in a magazine. You wouldn't just gone on the internet and just found out about it. And that's what I always think about the NAMM show. Like, imagine going to the technology you would have seen at some of the early NAMM shows. I mean, it's probably still around now, but the problem is that it's just not as obvious, you know. Yeah. But then you must have seen some stuff that must have just, like, absolutely just blown your mind. In fact, I just put in NAMM 1970, and there's an official thing from NAMM in the 1970s, some pictures, including the Ovation booth, where they have like a breadwinner and stuff like on display. Mm. Everything's that sort of like weird psychedelic bubble font. And just just Peavey. Look at the Peavey stand, looks awful. Ampeg, they're just like, here's an SVT. But yeah, it just must have just been an absolute wild ride to see that sort of stuff way back then.
I just found one from 1978, and I think they have the same carpet that they put down. And they have all the organs and everything, just like the piano, like they don't have the, what's that place? Like, it was like Key 88 or whatever the name is, like the upstairs bit where all the pianos and stuff are.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, yeah. It's like the weird bit was like just a bunch of suits, and then you get like the bald ponytails downstairs. Yeah.
It still has vibes of exactly what you'd expect now. I'm just looking at this. Baldwin Organs and Pianos, their booth is what, 2 meters by 2 meters. They've just built a robot out of speakers. And then just got like an old TV and just like, yep, that'd still be exactly what you'd see at NAMM right now.
Oh.
Very cool blast from the past, though. But it must have just been mad to, you know, like amps like that, like yours, JD, that have just sort of disappeared into the ether of musical instruments, you know, and they're still out there. People have still got that stuff, but no one really remembers any of it. But at the time, there would have been so many dealers that just sold those products. They probably couldn't afford to sell Marshall or Fender, the boutique brands of the day, as it were.
Or knew a guy, you know, and it was like, I went to school with Fenton. I'm guessing there's a guy called Fenton, and it's not just a dog running after some deer. But like, which is what I think every time I see this.
You can't, one can not think that when hearing the name Fenton now.
Yeah, American listeners, Google Fenton Richmond Park. Yeah. I'm with you, Matt. I was stunned when I saw it, and I was like, I've never heard of this or seen this, and it looks exactly like what I want. Also, because it's much, it's wider and shallower than a B-15, so it's sort of like, it looks bigger, but it also, in my sort of tiny studio space, takes up less room than I want to give to it. So it ticks all the boxes at the moment.
Very cool. Very cool. I actually, I downsized my bass rig a little bit this week as well. So the week just gone, I had my first gig of the year with Polymath, which is nice to go all the way over to Aldershot. We had a last minute, the day before, our keys player came down with COVID, or tested positive for COVID for the second time. He does work in a hospital, which is why. So we had to get together the night before, and we brought a keyboard along, and we had to work out which of us at which points were playing the simplest part so we could potentially free up a hand and play some of the keyboard parts that needed to be there, sort of thing. So it was to do that, like, in 1 3-hour rehearsal before a gig was very difficult, but I loved it. I loved the challenge. So it was very nice to be playing again. But of course, what I remember, like, 2-3 days before we gig, on the last tour I went, the fella from the support band blew up two of my cabs. And I was I was like, I don't have a cab. And so, you know, thank goodness that I, you know, I'm working with Ashdown. So I was able to, I called them and got them to send me down a couple of things. But I've been thinking, you know, I have these massive, great big 15-inch cabinets, these cotton wool lined huge things. They're 15-inch cabs, but they're in 410 housing, so they're massive. And they're heavy, and I just wanted something a bit simpler. So I went for two of the Ashdown Neo 12-inch cabs. So they're just two 250-watt cabs, lightweight, handle in the top. I mean, I carried both of them, like, out to the van at the same time, which is amazing for, you know, a bass stack. But it's also, you know, tall enough that it sits at chest height, so you're still sort of feeling the bass behind you. It sounded great. I was very, very pleased with that. But I did this thing. I've also been going way into my vintage styled stuff again. And recently, I put a proper big badass bridge on my jazz bass and EMGs in it. But I'm like, no, now I want everything to be like the 60s. So I got a simple Wilkinson bridge. Put that back on. And I got the ashtray covers for the jazz bass. I put them on the night before, changed the bridge and put the ashtrays on the night before. Turned up at the gig and we were doing the sound check. And our drummer, Chris, was like, what is that noise? Like, on the low end, when you're sort of stabbing notes. So I was like, I don't know what you mean. He was like, it's like I'm hitting a drum or something. Something's chiming. And we realized that because we're down-tuned and I play heavy gauge strings, the strings move around quite a lot. I'm going to play this acoustically into the mic sort of thing so you can hear. The string smacks against the metal ashtray, so you get this. Which does not work. So I had to do some last-minute unscrewing of the ashtray covers. Ugh.
I did that. I play pretty heavy with, like, upstrokes and stuff a lot too. And I kept hitting the one over, like, when on my J bass, like, over the bridge, the neck pickup, and, like, on the upstroke, and you just hear this, like, tink tink tink, like, but it was like super super loud and amplified because it just resonated as well as you just hear this, like, tink tink tink. Yeah. Which is why I don't have play them. I really like having them. I'm really comfortable. I can't.
No, exactly. They're one of those things that looks great, but there's no real practical application. But which is a shame.
Welcome, dear listener, to a new weekly segment called One Hot Minute, where each week I'll be demoing a piece of equipment briefly and showing you one thing that I love about it. Think of this like an audio Instagram reel where you get to hear the things we're excited about rather than just hear us harp on about it. This week I'm checking out the KMA Chief Disruptor. The Chief Disruptor is KMA's foray into Big Muff style fuzz, but with all things KMA, they tend to take ideas or staple products like the Muff, or previously as they did
with the HM2 in their Worm and Guardian of the Worm, and they expand upon that idea. What would the modern player like from this type of effect? In the case of the Chief Disruptor, they've added three separate muff-style voicings, a clean blend, a parametric EQ, a boost, and an expression-controllable mid-sweep. So a whole bunch of things. This pedal is so versatile that over the next few weeks I'm going to show you a number of different sounds you can achieve with the KMA Chief Disruptor. But the first thing that struck me about this fuzz is just how dynamic it can be, thanks to the clean blend, the EQ, and the voicings. Here's a clip of the Chief Disruptor on the vintage voice with the clean blend on full and the disruption control on just a hair. The EQ is relatively flat and I haven't engaged the mids boost. Listen out for how drastically the pedal tone changes when I dig in, and just how much clarity I get whilst picking softly. I'm playing a gold foil P90 loaded Harmony Juno, of course, and I'm playing into a clean Corey Wong Neural DSP amp plugin with a touch of reverb. And it's so much more than just a fuzz. I'll be back next week where we'll see just how much doom sustain this pedal can provide. Anyway, a little while ago, a few months ago probably, we talked about, I think J-Cross discovered on the podcast, this lovely little UK custom shop called Ann Coates guitars, and we checked them out at the time. They were very, very cool. The new Islington was, I think, their the model that they were really I think it was their only guitar at the time that we checked them out. I think shortly after, not necessarily because we'd said anything about them, but shortly after a podcast listener had purchased one and was I can't remember who, and was sharing pictures in the Guitar Nerds Facebook group, and it honestly looked fantastic. And Jay said, kind of off the podcast, you know, so genuinely being honest, he was really thinking about getting one. And for Jay to want to buy anything that's not Fender is that's a real, you know, testament to that brand. But yeah, they look fantastic. Anyway, they've introduced two new models and updated their website since then. So I thought we could, you know, take a little look at their two new guitars and have a chat about them. Dear listener, AnnCoatesGuitars.co.uk, A-N and then C-O-A-T-S, guitars.co.uk. They look fantastic. The new Islington Rocket and the NQ.
I'm really into the NQ. So for people that, aren't on the internet right now, a visual description would be a slightly more angular offset. It's got slightly more pointy corners, but not like metal pointy. It's just, you know, it's just, I don't know, it's got some sort of like pointy vibes about it, and a slightly pointy scratch plate, but has a real 60s kind of airline quality to it, especially the headstock, which has got that kind of slightly wider sort of vintage feel to it. Very, very cool indeed. The model pictured on their website is a single humbucker in the bridge in a kind of TV yellow. All the paint finishes. And I think this is the same as maybe Trent Guitars. It's the Obesh body, or Obeshi, I don't know how you pronounce it, which is quite an open pore, open grain wood. So it gives you that kind of Les Paul. Do you remember those like Les Paul Junior Fadeds?
Oh, that kind of vibe.
I think that's really, really cool. Just on their site now, a really easy selection process to put an order in as well. Quite nice that they use a company called the Little Green Paint Company. I'm assuming because they don't use any harmful materials. But you have a choice of 210 colours.
What?
Yeah, he's like, I've listed my favourites, of which, of course, pink is in there. So good choice to the team there. Marine blue, sonic red, Jack black, Mr. David yellow, confetti pink, mid azure green, or you can have a custom color. They have 210 colors available, or you can have a custom color for a small fee. Fully set neck, which I think is cool, with an extended tenon neck joint. So kind of similar to those sort of vintage Les Pauls and stuff, which is great.
I like that you can get it in Fender scale length or Gibson scale length. That's nice.
Yeah, it's a nice touch. I think that's the nice thing with these companies. Very much feel that they're sort of maybe still finding their feet. And because the guitars themselves perhaps are more modular, they're willing to like try a bunch of different things and offer a few different designs. And they use Creamery pickups. I think Creamery is based in a similar area to where they are. But you can basically pick everything that you want. Neck wood, fretboard wood, scale length, neck profile.
The radius is the one that's got me. That is quite a range. You can go from 7.5 to 15.
That is flat. I guess that's if you're going for the Ibanez vibe and you want a real shredder's neck.
I love that they do 7.5.
Yeah,
that's very cool.
I still think that one of the, you know, nine, obviously a lot of people did like 9.5 to 12. I think the Silver Sky, if I remember rightly, is 7.25. But a lot of people like, remember there was some Fender custom shops we did that were 7.25 to 9.5. So down the low end, if they felt a bit more rounded for chords, but a bit flatter for
that's for cool. Lead work that's a nice blend,
but doing like a 9.5 to 12 would be quite cool. So right at the top, you've got kind of more of that Gibson sort of feel to it. You've got a selection of nice woods as well, which is quite cool. So the Obeshi wood, Scandinavian redwood, swamp ash, and solid European ash. Brackets, can be heavy, but looks great.
And looks like it comes in very affordably. Like, I haven't entered all the things, so there might be a couple of things I need to add on there, but sort of the base price seems to be 900 squids.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, that's like without shipping or a case or anything, you know, dear listener. I haven't added all the things, and with whatever the entry level woods are on this as well, but that's an incredibly reasonable price. You just got to pop down a 30% deposit and that's it.
I'm quickly smashing down a bunch of specs that I would pick very, very quickly. I wonder if you can have more than you can have any single pickup from the Creamery. Okay, so they're doing that particular one in a single coil version. What pickup should we pick? Yeah, let's pick a Filtron. You can have extra pickups. Kill switch, of course. you can have like a brass scratch plate. That's wicked. I wonder if I didn't actually see the colours option. It doesn't matter. Yeah, it's coming out about 1,300.
Right.
Although if you want it shipped, about 1,400 with shipping, and about 1,450 if you want a gig bag with it as well. So, but I would say for a hand built custom guitar with basically picking every single spec you want, not bad.
That is very good. Yeah, it does look fantastic. I kind of like the other one too, the Rocket, which is their sort of a German carve you know, slightly swankier version of their New Islington. Oh, that's actually what he describes it as, the New Islington, but with all the bells and whistles.
Yeah, I really like the body on this is, you know, carved top sort of thing that you get with like a Rickenbacker 380 series, like 381s, I think. There was just, yes, I've always wanted one of those, so this feels like it would scratch a lot of those itches.
I love the Duesenberg trem.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It's very cool. Yeah, the top horns, both horns are very sort of Rickenbacker-esque on this version of the New Islington.
Yeah, it's very cool.
I just love it that, you know, the one they have up on their sites, like, you know, black wood grain with tort and brass and chrome. You know, it's just like, it's everything I would want just all over. Yeah, it's very cool.
It'd be so good to be able to make your own guitars. I still really want to do. Joe, we talked about it many years ago, pre-COVID, probably just before that, about going on the Crimson guitar course for a week. I'd still absolutely love to do that. I think it'd be amazing to be able to just walk away with something you built within a week. Yeah, you can do a 6-day, a 5-day, a 2-week, or you can do a 3-month building course. Wow. Amazing if you then had the space to go away and actually be able to be able to build it something. But I think being able to walk away with a guitar you built yourself, amazing.
Very cool. Yeah. We really should do it. Maybe next year.
I mean, once we get the new ITV show like settled and we can run like a limited series, it'd be great.
Yeah.
That is exactly what we'll do.
Yeah.
These are very. I mean, actually, I put down a deposit this week on a custom build.
I know.
I didn't mean to. It's a very affordable sort of. It's like a semi-custom. It's not really. It's not a custom build as such. Do you know Limelight basses? They're part of Classic and Cool Guitars. They basically make. It's Fender style guitar, very much Fender style basses, jazzes or precisions.
Heard of these guys before. Mm-hmm. Didn't
quite a few Brighton players ended up with them. There was a big
Christopher Franks nearly buy one of these at one point.
Potentially, I think they had a bit of I think someone at BIM, which dear listener, is the Brighton Institute of Modern Music. Which is the big music school in Brighton. Someone at BIM bought one at like one of the bass players there, and it sort of spread like wildfire. You know, everyone was like, "Oh, these are great," because essentially they are like custom shop Fenders. Obviously, not made by Fender, they're Limelight, but they are. We're talking about relict jazzes or precisions. He actually does do guitars as well. I've seen him do a couple of tellies in the past as well. But of course, it's heavily relict. Fender style instruments for, you know, less money than a custom shop. You know, if you consider a custom shop now is like 3.5, 3.8, they're about half the price. So it's a reasonable spend for something of this style.
So what did you actually order then, Joe?
I have gone for a 1960 spec. Jazz bass in black with a black plate, so rosewood neck. I've not got matching headstock, so heavy relic with aged ashtray covers, which I now realize I'll have to take off, and the Stackpot concentric controls. That's what I'm going for, but yeah. Heavy relic, so
nice.
Oh, I'm excited.
They also sell secondhand instruments. I can see they've got a 73 Gibson EBO, which looks very, very cool. Yes. But I am really into, and Joe, you should have bought this, the Sandberg 48 hardcore aged in midnight blue with racing stripes.
Is that their Thunderbird style Flying K style?
That is so cool. I would absolutely play that bass. I love it.
It looks like you'd be part of Voltron or some sort of like mech
I think it's cool that they've done the they've done a jazz bass in a precision bass, I think it is. I've just lost it. In White Over Candy Apple Red, which is the same as the one that the guy plays, Scott, I'm assuming, in Scott's Bass Lessons, which was the one that friend of the podcast, ex-GAC employee Wes Steed, ordered and had really early on. It's possibly one of the best custom shop basses I've ever played.
Do you know the bass in question that made these popular in Brighton? I can't remember the fella's name. He was quite a sort of a BIM guy, but it was very good session style bass player that ended up playing in a lot of bands. His was an Olympic White Precision over Candy Apple Red as well. So I think it's kind of a winning combination.
Yeah, it's a very, very, very cool combination, I think, in terms of, but that's cool. Dare I ask how much it's cost you, Joe?
The prices, he didn't list prices. I think he gets you to send them. I think it's around 1300 quid, something like that. So it's not too bad at all, with a £200 deposit, which was not too bad at all. And it's a backlog of takes 3-4 months at the moment to build, so plenty of time to pay it off as well, which is nice. So it's a relatively inexpensive thing. I appreciate it's a lot of money. A relatively inexpensive in comparison to Fender Custom Shop. I know it's not Fender Custom Shop. I know I couldn't have even talked about this if Jay was on the podcast. He'd have driven around here and punched me. But it's nice to be able to get something like that without quite the price tag you normally get.
Just on a side note of custom things, I was going through a bunch of photos yesterday to put out some photos for the wedding, and I realised I had a bunch of like old, I've been taking pictures of my guitar rig since day one, and I found some pictures of a custom finished Roland Juno 106, which I forgot that I had it, but I forgot how good it looked. And then I saw it and was just like, oh man, what a fool. You know, when you see stuff.
Why did you get rid of it?
I think I sold it for, I don't know.
Don't say rent.
No, I never sold anything for rent. Never. Never ever sold anything for rent. I only sold stuff to buy more stuff. Because it was in that position where to get more stuff, you had to sell stuff to buy stuff. But now, exactly. I can sort of just accumulate stuff. I'm still thinking about that. The reason I mentioned that was because I found some old pictures which included that Strat, which we talked about a few weeks ago, which this dealer has for sale, which I'm pretty sure is my old Strat. And I'm like, yep, still got to buy that. Might not be a custom shop, Joe, like you say, but, it's got some vibe to it. I want it.
Yeah.
Plus, I think it was mine at some point.
There can't be too many of them about.
Absolutely, but, yeah. Absolutely.
What was it called? It's the Hot Rod, it has all the words.
Hot-rodded like American Hot Rod Fat Strat, Texas Special.
All of the words, all of the words to describe a modded Strat.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. One day it will be mine.
Yes, it will be. Let's talk about some new things that have come out, because there's a big old list. But we're going to talk about some on the Patreon afterwards. We're going to talk about a few of the things that have caught our eye the most on here. First of all, KMA have released their Chief Disruptor. That's their new pedal. It looks fantastic. Just straight. I mean, I should tell you what it is, actually, dear listener, shouldn't I? It's a big muff style fuzz. Okay, but as with all things KMA, there's a lot more to it than that, which I'll go into shortly. But it looks fantastic. It's got to be one of their best looking pedals. I know some listeners will be screaming at at their phones or audio devices right now, but it does. It is cool. All the designs and the prints that KMA have on their pedals always seem to look fantastic, and this is no exception.
Yeah, I think from a design point of view, as with all of the stuff they've done, amazing. I don't think you can have it against companies to go, oh, it's based on this or it's based on that, because I think it's very difficult to go out and go, I'm going to create an entirely new circuit that no one's heard. You know, and obviously there's lots of experimentations with a relatively simple clipping circuit, I guess. But, you know, so many things are people's homages or takes on stuff they love. You know, it's like Thorpe's, you know, Fallout Cloud is, you know, based around a particular Big Muff that he loves. And, you know, there's so many different variables and things that can make two of the same pedal sound very, very different. So, I think it's good. And obviously Big Muff is just an incredible sound. And you could say Big Muff and there's 7 or 8 different ones that it could sound like as well. Exactly. But there's a couple of extra controls on this. I think one that stands out for me is it's nice to have the pre or post clean blend, which obviously a lot of people, you know, when we, you know, Boss did the HM2, a lot of people are like, oh, I want a clean blend on it. You know, I think a lot of people like cranking the gain, but, you know, want a clean blend.
You want some definition.
Just cut through. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I don't. If I'm using a Big Muff, I just, you know, turn that off. You know, I want nothing but a wall of sound. You know, give me my bloody Valentine wall of noise. But I think, you know, for something like a Big Muff, that does help cut through the mix a bit more. Something you absolutely need. And it's something that's missing on, I would say, 99% of a similar style pedals out there.
Yeah, I agree. Like, it's because Big Muffs are so, that's so all in, that sound is, it's such a big sonic wall that if you did want to do anything that's not Doom with a Big Muff, you probably got to use a line selector or something to bring in something else, or you've really got to have some EQ going on after it to try and shape some definition from the pedal. And I think that's what KMA do really well. Like, they did it, you know, before with the Guardian of the Worm, where they were, you know, they take things. In that case, it was an HM2 style pedal, but they take a staple and they add a bunch of stuff to it to make it more versatile. In this case, they've got 3 different modes, or, you know, sort of 3 different voicings for the Chief Disruptor. It's got a tight, like a fat sort of heavy one, and a vintage inspired. So you've got 3 sort of different voicings for a Big Muff style pedal just off the bat, before you look at the fact that there's, you know, there is the EQ, foot switchable mids, expression switchable mids. So you could, you know, even make a manual phaser with that, which is kind of cool because it doubles up. You get that Coctoir sound with it as well. The clean blend is the big one for me because it means you can use it dynamically. It's not just a, here's your fuzz sound. You know, it can be used. You can really dig in and get more out of it, but get almost more of a drive than a fuzz. It makes it versatile because it can do all that crazy stuff as well. But, you know, there's just a bit more to it. You get just being able to get some of the lovely harmonics that you think about with a Big Muff, but still be able to hear your guitar. That's kind of cool. That's something I'm into.
Mm. Well, and I think it's just, there's so many options on this that allow you to change, you know, this pedal that it ends up being potentially, I don't want to use the cliche of like, oh, it's like 4 pedals in one, but it's the thing that, like, I always find with, like, my big, like, I've had several different Big Muffs and I'm always like, this is the one, I love it. And then I'll want something slightly different. And like, Each Big Muff I have does the one thing, or I find one setting I really like it for, and then I can't use it, or I have to swap out, and it just depends on, you know, like my flavors, where it feels like this may be, you know, one pedal that then allows you to sort of change, like if taste change or like sort of situations change, you can sort of adjust it and be like, oh, this still works for everything, or, you know, just my whims change as they do, you know, like it's, yeah, I'm really into it. And it, you know, I love a Big Muff and I really want to love so many other things more, because it just seems so boring to be like, oh, a Big Muff, you know, pedals you can still get for under $100.
Yeah.
You know, so, but it's still just like, yeah, it's every time I start playing something else, I always end up going back to, like, you know, some variation of a Big Muff.
Yeah. I wanted to get one recently just because I spoke about it before, like about how Tim used the, I've forgotten the name of it now, the Earthquake Advice's recent
Big Muff style pedal. We used it a whole bunch on recording, and I was like, man, I don't own any. I don't own any Big Muffs. Actually, I do. I've got the Russian, the little Bright Onion pedals, the Russian. But, you know, other than that, I don't really have any. So I thought it'd be cool to get one, but, you know, the Earthquaker devices was a little expensive for a Big Muff, and when I'm sort of also looking at the fact that, you know, Electro Harmonix do one for, you know, 65 quid or whatever, you know. So I wasn't sure where to go, what to get. And this is actually less money than the Earthquaker devices for something with, and like, just honestly, if this was just a Big Muff but had the clean blend on it, that would probably be enough for me. You know, that's the thing that I need, because it means it works with bass as well.
Yeah. I mean, and I almost always, like, kind of what we're talking about, when I use a Big Muff, I almost always just really want that big bloom sound of, like, massively sustained, and, you know, that's usually what I'm using it for. But also having the clean blend means you can still hear what the notes you're actually playing are.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's important, bass players. So,
Well, okay, very cool. That's the KMA Chief Disruptor. Now, another company that we've spoken about a bunch in the past and had on the podcast before, Old Blood Noise Endeavor, still the best named pedal company. And I mention this every time, but I love that their pedals come with the instruction manuals fold out into artwork that you could frame or put up, and it's always fantastic artwork. They've introduced. Sounds boring when companies introduce second versions of something, but they have introduced the V2 version of the XS. The XS kind of passed me by the first time, I think, because I just wasn't around, you know, I wasn't aware of them when it was released the first time. So I guess I missed it. But it's a distortion, chorus, and delay, which are not three things I would expect to be put together on a pedal unless it was a big multi-effects thing.
Yeah, I think the only time I've seen it similar... that was boost. There's that JHS pedal that's boost, chorus and reverb, which is, you know, trying to go for a kind of more 80s vibe. But this is, the second version of the XS. And if you don't remember, Joe, the XS was actually in the bigger housing, the same one that the Minim and the Rever was in. So this is now moved to your standard, what we should say, like Hammond small sized stomp box enclosure. So a single stomp rather than a double stomp, I guess you would say. But yeah, very cool. Expands on a lot of options. I think Dan, as always, has done a great video in his Dan Explains It All.
That's such a great video series.
Yeah, and obviously Brady as well, and the rest of the guys there are amazing. But what I really like about this is the three modes are chorus, delay, and then fifth, which is a kind of tuned delay to kind of give you this almost like fifth-like harmony. And then you can either run modulation first, distortion first, or run them in parallel, which I think is very cool. Plus you can use an expression pedal as well, which is very cool. So the expression pedal controls rate and depth. That's something that we're seeing a lot. And I think another pedal we might talk about has something similar. But loads of gain on tap, which I really like. So you don't have to use it for kind of super noise. You can use it much lower gain. And then finally, sneakily, inside, a little internal trim pot to set the wet dry mix.
That's very cool.
So, you know, Old Blood Noise, they make some fantastic noisy pedals for kind of noisy music and some sort of extreme stuff. But you can really dial it back. And I can actually see this, because those sections are on separate stomp pedals, you could really use this, you know, to quite sort of wide effect on a pedal board, I think.
Yeah, I was just thinking about, I was just stunned with how flexible this is and how small it is. And just thinking about, like, what real estate's being able to do this would have taken up, like, even 5-6 years ago. Now, and, you know, and this isn't some micro nano pedal, it's a regular pedal size, but it's just, it feels so flexible, and it feels like something that if you weren't going to go full on like HX Stomp or like My Mod Dwarf or something, and you still want individual pedals to be able to do stuff, like this feels like this, the 27 Big Muffs in one that we were just talking, you know, and like you start getting, you know, a few of these things together and you have such a sonic palette you could do with three or four pedals that aren't what I would really class as like multi effects units.
No.
You know, they're just like very flexible units that do lots of stuff.
Mm. Yeah. It's really cool. This is a wonderful new offering. I know it's just a V2, but moving it into the smaller box, as you say, everything about it, this is great. A great company. I need to. I haven't watched the Dan Explains video for this yet, so I'm gonna do that because it seems very cool.
Yeah, I'm into it. But I guess, yeah, on a similar vibe, Joe, we should probably talk about the MXR pedal.
Oh, yes, yeah. Of course. Yeah, this actually came out on the 5th of January. It sat at the bottom of our things to talk about list since the podcast started this year. So we finally got round to it.
I can't remember if we did maybe talk about it in a Patreon or something. But obviously, I think... JD, you said this was the first pedal that you've seen that you want to buy.
Yeah. I mean, and it was one because I saw when it was announced and then that they weren't available. I'm not even sure they're available yet. I'm just trying to just do a quick look. But yeah, it's just the idea.
The Poly Blue Octave.
The MXR Poly Blue Octave, which has basically, I always really like MXR's octaves. They're really good. It's got, you know, octave up, octave down, two octaves up, two octaves down, all on separate controls, again, in a small casing, and like fuzz and modulation in it as well.
and a clean blend.
Oh, and a clean blend. Ugh. I mean, yeah, it's really interesting. Like all the octaves I have, I have old Mutron octave divider. I have various other ones, and they're always great for octaves down, or like you get an octave up, which is that real ring modulated sort of sound you get, like the green ringers and things. But then, you know, like I've never really gotten on with any of the other pedals, certainly that do octave up. Like I think it sounds, if you're playing bass and it's clean, it sounds really weird to me. Like they always sound like fake.
Yeah.
And I think the MXRs handle them really well, and they sound like much more real and musical, and you don't need to then put that into a distortion or something else to sort of tame or sort of harshen up the sort of digital things that you get with like whammies, and that, you know, like a whammy has its own sound. It doesn't,
yes, yeah, it's it, an effect, yeah,
it doesn't
sound
like your guitar. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I must admit I'm with you on this one, JD. I think this looks like a great mix of just loads of great stuff can be used individually or together. But the fact that you've basically got a Phase 90 in there and then the octaves can be controlled with an expression pedal, I'm like, they've sort of done everything right, in my opinion.
This is very good.
I've always had a love-hate, I guess, with the POG. I remember having a micro POG, you know, and bought one very soon after they came out, because the big POG, you know, was cool, but, you know, obviously really gained massive fame after Jack White sort of used one. And then I had one for a while, never really used it, liked the octave down. Then I found the OC2, and obviously that's been with me for years and years and years. And I bought a micro POG not that long ago and just plugged it in and went, it actually sounds a bit rubbish. Like, it just, I don't know, it's just something just doesn't feel very natural about it, where this feels and sounds much better, in my opinion. Everything I've seen on this, I'm like, no, this sounds really chunky. You know, it's got that sort of OC2 vibe in the sub. You know, the upper octave's got that kind of more whammy vibe about it. Definitely very, very cool. I want one.
Me too. It was just one of those things. Like when it was announced, I was kind of like, oh, okay, like another octave pedal. You know,
I glossed over it until just now, to be honest.
I was looked at it and I was like, and I know you know, I love all the Dunlop and MXR stuff. And so I was like, well, maybe I'll pay attention. I was like, ooh, actually, oh. And I just had those moments, like, probably like you were talking about, Matt, where it's just like, okay, well, now, I'm more into this. And then, yeah, it just feels like, yeah, like you were saying, like, knocked it out of the park. Looks amazing. Again, I think the general theme we're seeing here is like small, massively flexible pedals, like expression inputs on everything.
Yeah, every pedal we've spoken about has an expression pedal input, even though we've talked about an octave pedal, a drive pedal, and, you know, yeah, a weird bit of all of them.
Yeah, yeah, a combo pedal that's like stepping on one instead of four.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, it's just really interesting to see this go back to, it's something that looks like it would appeal to someone who kind of wants a bit of flexibility and or may want to do like an octave up for a tiny one song or something, you know, like someone's doing like an octave up Jimi Hendrix-y thing or something and maybe doesn't want like a full pog, but it's like, oh, I could use this for one song or two. I don't want like a HX stomp. I don't want anything that's got menus and is complicated.
Yeah.
But also like it just feels like this would appeal to literally everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder if this will this be the new standard, you know, where the pog is left off, or to be honest, have we passed that time where, you know, everyone's buying an octave pedal?
I think octaves are still a great addition to your pedal board. And I think having something like this is just, it just gives, I think it gives you more options, you know, or just use the fuzz or just use the phaser. But the fact that you can even just use a tap tempo foot switch to go between two sets of settings, you know, so you don't even have to like, you know, use an expression pedal to like sweep between them. That's very cool. I can see you hooking up to like an MS3 and using one of the control outs to, you know, jump between two settings. You know, it's like two pedals in one then. Really cool.
This is very cool. Very cool indeed. Yeah. Now, that is all the time we have on this week's episode of Guitar Nerds. You can, of course, dear listener, join us on Patreon over at patreon.com/guitar nerds. We're going to go there. We're going to talk about like Squire's 40th anniversary, maybe a couple of other random guitar releases that have happened this week. You can become a Patreon supporter for as little as $1 a month. At the dollar tier, you'll get this episode ad-free and early every week. $5 gets you access to the Patreon special episodes and our entire back catalogue, and $10 gets you the lot, plus I'll sing you my thanks at the end of every episode. Find us on all your favourite social media platforms and join the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook to get involved in our weekly episode discussion. Thanks for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Pew pew, freedom. Bye.
Daniel Walker, Ben Harder, Drummond Brown, Holly Simpson, John Conaway, Eric Vaughan, Russell Healing, Paul Drew, Peter Blair, Ty Allen, Yogi the Guitarist, Kyle Harris, Joe Hart, Sean Hughes, Brian Hansen, Shane Molloy, Eric Hemmer, Jeffrey Wax, Brian Eisler, Gavin Van der Linden, Andy Manley, Robert Butterworth, Scott Utterly, Marcus Alkanowacki, Simon Milbourne, Stuart Robson, Christian Van Hansen, Keith Adams, Eric File, Jack Cutmore, Joe Buttick, Store, Abe Matthews, Ken Sayers, Kytopia the Man, John Anglin, Ross Edwards, Stephen Bourne, Aaron Sherman, Dave Lee, Jake Gray, Scott Kennedy, Christopher Losek, Derek Rich, Blake Wyland, Rob Norvig, Shady Short, Steve Merkel, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Robin Smith, Scott O'Brien, Paul Corrigan, and Moon Clavick.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit amfam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.